I'm going to start off this event and say that the talk is The Art of Serendipity, Connecting with Coincidences. And so, what's serendipity? It's discovering or finding something that is valuable to you when you weren't looking for it, almost like a gift. It's a coincidence, a happy accident, good fortune, perhaps even. So, what is it that I need to do to spot and to access and create serendipity in my life? Can I connect dots, and is it just about connecting dots, or is it seeing the unexpected? And so tonight we have Judy Johnston. Judy is a co coaching consultant in experiential learning, and we were ex learning what that means, both in leadership and organizational effectiveness. Judy is a mum, an author, a meditator, and she's based in Halifax. So Judy, welcome. I'm going to hand over to you in just a moment and say that someone can't hear. I hope you can hear now. Gosh, maybe it was my voice. But Judy, for everybody to know, Judy's going to speak for about 30 to 40 minutes. She's going to do a short meditation, and then she'll be taking your questions. Please send your questions to us via the question link in your email, in your registration email. And I'll be putting your questions to Judy after her talk. Judy, thank you.
Artie, thank you. Nice to see you. Hello. Somebody was asking, did we just start at six? But actually, the Artie has this wonderful method of chatting with the speaker for a little bit first. So that's what we were doing. I've never experienced that before, and I really liked it. So it certainly warms up the speaker. I feel right at home now. So welcome everyone who's joining us, and I feel very welcome. Thank you to Artie. I'm sharing my screen, and I'm hoping you're seeing the Art of Serendipity. I know some will be listening on podcasts later, so I'll speak to the PowerPoint images as we go, if that's okay. Artie, maybe you just give me an indicator that it's all okay. You
It's
can
absolutely
see.
yeah.
Okay, fine. Great. Okay, good. Thank you. And volume's okay?
It is for me, yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so and I won't even pay attention when that little chat box goes flashing. Okay, I'll just ignore it completely. I wonder how I can get rid of that so I don't see it. Okay, because I'm ever so responsive. So as you would have discovered a little bit about me as Artie and I were talking, and I'm here in Halifax. It's midday, and you're in the evening time there. And when Artie asked me this, she said, "Have you got a theme?" And I went, "No, anything you pick." And then she picked this one, and wow, it's been one to get my head around. I think we use this word serendipity. No, I don't. Not very much. No, not very much. But I think we know it. It's in our language. And I actually didn't know what it meant, and I had to go online for synchronicity, coincidence, serendipity. There was another one. I'm happy to discover that the art of serendipity is discovering, as Artie said earlier, when you make a discovery or find something valuable you weren't even looking for. I did my master's in adult education a long time ago now, 30 years maybe. And when I did it, I remember my advisor asked me, so, and it was in organizational transformation. That was my thesis. And my advisor asked, so, would you describe to me, please, your research methodology? And so I described to him how I went about learning, discovering authors and suitable things to be research, literature, to be including in my thesis. And he looked at me and he said, "Ah, I see, serendipitous browsing. You were serendipitous browsing." And I'd never heard of that before. And I have used it since. I quite like it. Serendipitous browsing for him meant that I just kind of sniffed around. I found something that I liked, and then I discovered what this person liked. This one in his, you know, or her citations would have said, go to this one. So I went to that one. Oh, and I liked that one. And then I went to this one. So in a way, I just reinforced my own worldview, which given that I was supposed to make a case in my thesis for a certain approach to organizational transformation, it worked for me, but it was serendipitous browsing. So it can actually be a way of living, is to just be wandering around and finding valuable things that you weren't looking for. And coincidence, so I'm here today actually because of serendipity. And I'm here because Artie and I met. Artie was something valuable I discovered that I didn't know I was looking for. Well, not Artie herself, but Artie as a person. I don't know if you remember Artie, but I think it was probably 15 or maybe even 18 years ago. Artie and I were both, we were two of 108 guests selected from around the world in the Brahma Kumaris to spend a week in our retreat center in upstate New York, Peace Village, to study with, well, to spend a week in conversation and experiential learning with a gentleman called David Cooper Ryder. And he was the author, the creator of what we know as appreciative inquiry, which in my work at the time was very relevant. So it was a blessing for me to be invited to this event, but it was a BK hosted event because David felt there was so much overlap with the BKs in the study of Raj Yoga. So anyways, I go to this event. I'm a relatively new student at the Brahma Kumaris, maybe 2-3 years, very new. And we're in this group of 108 people. And I met Artie. And I don't even remember what we talked about. I don't think we had much time to talk. But I recognized her. I just felt this is a valuable soul. This is a valuable person. I like this person. I know this person. I feel like I know this person. And that was it. And I think I've seen Artie maybe twice since then in 20 years. And this is probably the longest conversation we've had in, well, we did talk last week about this event, but yeah, it's not like we spend time on a daily basis. And yet there was something very valuable I found at that meeting, and it was serendipitous. And it was serendipity that I got, and that's why I'm here today with you. And the fact that I got invited to that event goes back to my going to Mexico and saying I did not want to go on this business and consciousness retreat hosted by an American conference group because I had an attitude about America, because I had an attitude about consciousness and spirituality, because I had an attitude about business. And instead I said yes, and I went, and I had this amazing spiritual experience that brought me to the Brahma Kumaris, which took me to Peace Village to meet Artie, which brings me here with you today. So all of that we could say is a coincidence. The act of two things coinciding, Artie and I coinciding, me and the Brahma Kumaris as a spiritual organization, as a study. But actually it was probably me and God that met in Mexico. But the coincidence, the act of two things coinciding, happening at the same time by accident, but seem to have a connection. So I love these two together. So serendipity, that you discover something you weren't looking for. Coincidence, two things coming together, happening at the same time, that seem to have a connection. So I was reflecting on my life, and you know, maybe for many of us, it seems like chance at the time, or it seems like coincidence at the time. But when you look back, you can see that all of the dots connected. Of course, I needed to be in Mexico for that conference I didn't want to go to, because I had to meet this person who, well, who through whom or with whom I had this amazing experience on my own that led me to Artie, that led me to here. So that's just one little track. But it seems like chance at the time, but when you look back, it all kind of makes sense. And that's because we begin to see very clearly how every choice I have ever made in my life has led me here, actually here, sitting behind this desk in front of this computer screen, talking to myself while talking to a screen with pictures on it, but knowing you're all there. Like every choice I've ever made in my life has led me here. Because had I chosen not to go to Mexico, I wouldn't be here. Had I, well, let's see. Maybe I would have been got some other way. But serendipity, I think, makes most sense in retrospect, because we can look back and see how, as disjointed as those dots seem to be, one over here, Mexico, Covent Garden, you know, India for me, all of these things, and you can draw lines between them and you essentially have the constellation of your life, if you think about it. I saw this in Heathrow before travel was shut down. Some of you may have seen this. I think it was as big as a wall, a big wall. I don't know how big, 20 feet by maybe 10 feet tall. This woman rug hooked this image of the world. And I thought, that's exactly how our lives are, like threads, and every decision we ever make somehow gets knotted with someone else's, and then in the end creates our world, the story of humanity, each of us connecting and overlapping at significant moments, essentially rug hook the world, macrame the world, knit the world, whatever. I think this is, she called it rug hooking, but I can see there's other things in there. Isn't that amazing? Anyways, it was huge. It was in Heathrow. It's since come down, I'm sure. So all of our choices lead us to a place, and they create the world we're in. So I was thinking, though, as RT suggested in the request for this talk, was, but looking forward, can I make serendipity work for me? So looking back, it all makes sense that that seeming coincidence led me to here. Yeah, so many stories, and I'm sure you've all got all of your own stories to tell. When you look at your life and you connect the dots and you can see how, oh, that's how I got here, or that's how that significant thing happened for me. So I know I can make it work. It makes sense looking back, but does it make sense looking forward? So I began exploring how is it that we could make serendipity work for us? Is it in fact such a mystery, or are we somewhat in control of it? So I brought, look, that moves. I've never seen that before. Oh, sorry, podcasts won't know this. This image moves on the screen. Lovely. So I thought I would explore today these three secrets to make serendipity work for you. For me, this is how it works for me. So one of them, they're basically three different understandings. The first one, and I think they all fit under this banner heading of fortune favors a prepared mind. They attribute this to Louis Pasteur, but it's contentious. We don't know who said it originally, but fortune favors a prepared mind, essentially, is what all these three secrets would fit under this banner heading. So the first secret, though, I began thinking, if serendipity is I find something valuable that I wasn't looking for, well, what if, and I actually believe this is true, that we're all window shopping our way through life, that we're all actually always looking for something, or we're always on the lookout. You know, when you window shop, you look like this woman is doing in a window, at a shop with some lovely woolen scarves and cushions and handbags. And you know, when you window shop, you look inside a window and suddenly you discover, oh, I need that. Or, oh, I didn't even know that thing existed. That would be really useful to me. I think that we're all window shopping our way through life. We're all looking for things. And then we discover something precious. So we walk by like this sweet shop and we see something. Oh yes, I love those. I haven't had those since I was a kid. In you go and you purchase this particular sweet. And you feel like, wasn't that a great day? I found this thing that reminded me of my childhood, or that, you know, was precious to me at one time. And oh, here I go. I remember it now. So I think that we're all window shopping all the time. So for me, one of the secrets of serendipity is actually just to know that. And even more than that, to know what I'm looking for. So one of the things I've learned in this meditation journey is that all of the things I'm now discovering through meditation, peace, happiness, love, I think I was looking for those things all my life. And in fact, every decision I made was an attempt to have that, to get closer to those things. But then in fact, all those things I was looking for were actually inside of me. And in fact, I have always been looking for them. So one of the secrets I think of serendipity, or making it work for you going forward, is to ask yourself, you know, what have I always been looking for? What am I looking for? What have I always been looking for? And it may fit in these categories. Many of us are looking for this, looking for love, to be with our loved ones, which gives us the feeling of love. Great many of us are looking for peace. You know, whether that's to get the kids to be quiet for 20 minutes so I can plug in my earphones and have a meditation. If it's to get the kids to go out with the dad tomorrow, please, so we can be home alone. You know, if it's to go on that holiday that ended up being quite expensive and got me stuck in customs and sitting too close to someone on a plane that wanted to talk, you know, whatever the story was, it wasn't as pleasant as I thought it would be. And I get there and it rains for 2 weeks. But why did I go? Because I was really looking for some peace. I got really snarled up in all the complications to get it, but what I was looking for. And I associated what I was looking for with these physical or practical experiences. And most of us are looking for happiness. You can fill in your own blanks, but I think the first secret to serendipity is to know what I'm looking for. Because if I know what I'm looking for, I'll be more likely to recognize it when it's in front of me. The famous children's book that starts with the statement, believing is seeing. So if you don't believe it's possible, you won't see it. And they've got all kinds of animations online where somebody walks in a room dressed in a certain way and nobody expected that to happen, so they didn't even see it. If you don't believe in human goodness, then you won't see the evidence of it in front of you every day. If you don't believe people are trustworthy, then you certainly won't see it either. So knowing what you're looking for helps you see it, helps you recognize it when it's right in front of you. And you might not recognize it even when it is right in front of you. You know, I can all think of people that I may have met in one circumstance and not necessarily felt connected to, meet them in another circumstance at another time in your life, and it's a perfect fit, you know, either to work together, even for friendship, even partnership in life. So know what you're looking for. And I think this is true even at the deepest level in terms of, you know, RT and I were speaking at the beginning of this about I love bringing people together. I love seeing the lights go on, seeing someone have a realization about themselves and their own journey, their own beauty, their own direction, say, and to be any part of constructing a process, whether it's just a question or an experience, but a process that allows people to have, or is a catalyst for people to have this kind of realization. So because that's what I'm all about in a way, my whole life, I have been looking for opportunities to do that. But I wouldn't have said I was looking for those opportunities until I discovered, oh, I've always been looking for that. I've always been looking to bring people together to do this. And as the opportunities arose, and especially as I began to meditate, I realized, you know, that's actually my spiritual DNA. It's kind of the core of who I am. I'm going to do that no matter where I am. So whether I'm working in a bank, I'm still going to have all these people gather together because that's kind of who I am. My kids used to say to me, they had the best birthday parties ever. They go down in history as great birthday parties because while all the other kids were going to the bowling alley or the movie theater or the swimming pool, which were great birthday parties, don't get me wrong, I was the only mom, partly because of finances, but also it was way more fun to create a birthday party at home with the kids. They had the most elaborate scavenger hunts. These do go down in history. And as it turns out now, the kids make these things for me. They make amazing scavenger hunts for me. On places like when we can't be together for Christmas or when we're not seeing each other. But one time they looked at me and they said, Mom, you can't not facilitate, right? And I thought, yes, that's true. It's sort of in me. So if you know what you're looking for, you're going to notice how your whole life keeps presenting you these opportunities because that's actually what you're looking for. And even if you didn't know what you were looking for, the opportunities will reveal to you as a mirror, oh, I keep getting these things. I guess that's what I'm looking for. Secret one. Secret number two, tune in and surrender to a higher frequency. I think this is one of the secrets of serendipity. And that higher frequency might be God, the divine, a supreme source of energy, or that higher frequency might be your own highest aspiration. Many of us are very fear-driven in the way we live. You know, we're compelled to do things. Even our language in the day, oh, I have to do this today, and then I have to do this when I should do this. And it's all, you know, very fear-based consciousness. It's sort of like we're driven or pushed to do things out of fear. And I noticed that a few years ago. I was just fed up being courageous because you only need courage when you've got fear. I thought, I'm done with courage. I've used it so much in this life. I mean, I'm not done. It's still good. But I realized that actually what I wanted to be was fearless. I wanted fear to be less of a driver in my life because it was such a driver. And even when I had higher aspiration, fear was always competing. But I feel more and more over the meditation journey that it's my higher aspirations that are drawing me rather than being propelled by fear. So tuning in and surrendering to this higher frequency for me has been a really cool, it's been a secret of serendipity that has changed the way I live. I feel like my whole life now is serendipitous browsing because I kind of trust that my higher vibration, my higher aspiration will put me in an environment whereby that beautiful thing that I didn't know I was looking for will appear. Bear with me on the pictures, but I love these pictures. Somebody was doing art with safety pins. And for those who can't see it, it's a safety pin that's bent a bit so it looks like a pregnant mother standing, and inside is a baby safety pin. And then the other is just a lineup of safety pins, but on a mirror. So they have a shadow there, or they're reflected there. most of us go through life from birth to death, sort of following our noses, following whatever decision seems right in the moment. And I have to giggle because I was thinking about Artie and I in Peace Village together. And what happens to safety pins when a magnet shows up? Y'all get sucked up to the magnet. So we coincide with those seeking a higher vibration because we're all hanging out in the same energy field. So if you keep your energy at its highest, if you're allowing your aspirations, the energy of your aspirations, or if you're hanging out with the divine, in other words, creating an inner meditative, you know, posture, a state of my own energy, more in tune with the divine energy. When you're hanging out at that frequency, you're just going to bump into others that are hanging out there as well. It'll seem like magic, and in a way it is, but actually you're all just vibrating at this higher energy field. So the giggle the other day when this image came to mind was, you know, there I am attracted to this higher energy, which is what happened to me in Mexico, which got me to Peace Village. There I am hanging out as a safety pin, and oh, lo and behold, the safety pin next to me is Artie. And we look at each other and go, hey, nice to see you. Yeah. It's almost like we recognize the vibration in each other, even though we know nothing about each other's personal stories, really, over time. It didn't matter. We recognized each other. So a bunch of safety pins hanging out behind the magnet of God's divine energy, let's say, or the field of higher vibrations. There are many people in the world, and I'm seeing it more and more, who are, it's like we're finding our tribes. You know, we're all finding those people who, like us, have a higher aspiration. So if it's helping the world, if it's helping a certain part of the world, if it's being the best self I can be, if somehow I've connected those two, that being my best self will also help the world, whatever my highest aspiration is, others with that similar aspiration will be drawn by this higher energy field. And so we start to find our tribe, actually. I feel this is a time when we're all coming into our communities, our extended clans, those who we vibrate with at the same frequency. So that's secret number two is, tune into your highest energy field, your highest aspirational energy. And there you will coincidentally, you will coincide, you will experience the coincidence of coming together with others like you, or with those things that you find valuable and you didn't even know you were looking for them, but there they are hanging out in the same frequency. And so number three was to be open. Is just to be open. There are so many signals. And if you're walking through your day, head down, kind of closed in on your own mentality, closed in on your own worries, closed in on your own preoccupations, you're going to miss the signs. And they're all over the place when you're looking. So being open was secret number three. And then you'll tie up, you'll meet other threads that are traveling in your frequency, your energy field. And who knows what kinds of great co-creations you can cook up, you can knot up together. So that was all I was going to say about serendipity before the meditation. And Artie, we can either do questions now or after and end with a meditation, whatever works for you.
We do the meditation first and then do the questions.
Okay. I'll just get a little lozenge in. A little cough in our meditation. Okay. So, given that I can only see my own face and the slides, I have no idea what resonated with all of you in that. So let's just sit for a moment and come into that. You might want to breathe for a moment or two and just settle your bodies. Come back into your body, actually, because we've been in the mind connecting with ideas and thoughts. So just for the start of our meditation, you can just take a deep breath in. Reconnect with your body. Feel the contour of your body against the chair. And become aware of your own breath. Very sweet, regular rhythmic occurrence. The breath in this body, very grounding, just to follow my breath for a few seconds. And in this space of silent awareness of the breath, see if you can focus your awareness on your heart and see if you can feel your heartbeat. And feel how silent and concentrated that makes you inside. Imagine an invisible line from your heart up to the forehead behind the eyes. And as you know, this is where we in the Brahma Kumaris locate the thinking being, the soul, the self, that I am that one, that beautiful spark of life. So bring yourself up behind your eyes. Just be aware of the thinker, the one who has the thoughts, and actually the one who is making the body breathe. With an inner smile, visualize yourself sparkling. Maybe like a sparkler that we hold in the dark night and see it sparkling. And as you breathe in the body, become aware that this sparkler inside your mind is sparkling with all of the beauty of a life lived. Every choice, every detour, every intuitive detour or direction or decision you've made in your life has brought sparkle, has brought moments of value, moments of beauty, moments of meaning, and moments of connection. And that you look back at your life and it's been a serendipitous flow, discovering things of value as you went along your way. And in each discovery, learning something about yourself, learning something about the one who recognizes value, the one who sees signals, the one who gets and understands the significance of something, and especially the value of something, the value of my life, the value of others' lives, the value of time and energy, the value of love, the value of true feelings. Let me just take a moment and ask myself, what is it I'm shopping for? What is it I really want? What am I looking for and have been looking for my whole life? The first words that pop into your mind are probably quite accurate. And feel as if there's a window that's opened in the soul. A window, a door leading to a pathway. And the sun, like in the picture on this image in front of me, the sun of the source, son of God, son of the divine light, shining down on this pathway. And this higher vibration energy pulling you forward to make new discoveries that are incredibly valuable on your journey from here forward, so that you begin to live a life, if you haven't already, of serendipity. And there will be no coincidences. There will only be great moments of beauty and meaning. Shanti.
Okay, the first question that's come in for your attention is, how do you know when you're living to your highest aspirations rather than under fear-based consciousness?
I think that's a really good question, because I mean, I just noticed yesterday there was a trace of fear driving me to do something that I hadn't noticed. So I actually think it's a bit of a lifelong journey. I think there are some obvious, I think for me, feeling just basically less anxious, feeling more content, feeling more at ease, trusting life a little bit more, trusting my choices, trusting the drama of life, that where I'm supposed to be is exactly where I'm supposed to be, where I am is where I'm supposed to be, and that anything I need will come in its time, and that no matter how much I might want to push and force, if it's not time, it's not going to come. So relax and make the commitment to myself and to my, you know, divine guide, that I'll stay peaceful and until it's the right time. So I think the one indicator that I am living my life aspirationally and not fear-based is that I feel different. I relax into living a little bit more. Also, I think I begin to connect the dots. I begin to see evidence of things coming to me naturally without me struggling. But like I said, I actually think that's a long journey, because I think fear is layered so deep in us that, you know, even now, even after so many years, I don't know, maybe Artie hasn't got any more fear in her, but I'm still discovering traces of it. And they're lighter traces, they're nuanced, but they feel big when they're experienced inside. So I hope that's helpful, but that would be my answer, that it's a journey. And every time I notice that fear is driving me, I make the choice to shift, to trust, to faith, to acceptance, receptivity, getting out of control mode into letting it flow and watch like an observer mode. So I think it's an ongoing practice, and it's part of our journey to shed a fear-driven paradigm or way of living.
Interesting. What happens if you miss serendipity, a serendipital moment, or you haven't connected the dots? Does that mean you've missed out completely, or does it come back?
I think it comes back. I think we get several signals until we're ready, because I think that's part of looking back at your journey and seeing with absolute clarity how all those dots connected. And at the time, you wouldn't have made the meaning out of it that you can make retrospectively. So moving forward, it's the same. There will be something that maybe I didn't give great importance to. I didn't recognize that it was valuable, but two steps from now I will notice. My daughter just got a job, we're very excited for her, and she made a choice to get out of her sector and into something else. It felt right. She has a bigger aim, and just this morning she was saying, you know, I don't know, it feels right at this moment, so I'm going to do it. But who knows, it'll maybe be the next job or the next job after or later down the road when she'll look back and say, ha, it was because of that job choice that she ended up there. So I think in the moment, all we can do is do, I think it's the Frozen movie that my little, you know, niece went to see and told me, you do the next right thing. I think it's the mantra in the Frozen movie, do the next right thing. So you can only do what feels right in this moment. And I think the way serendipity works is that another signal, another something will come along until you're ready to embrace, if it's a big change or a big move. But I think life prepares us in gentle ways. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Thank you. There's lots of people saying thank you, so that's there. But what's the difference between serendipity and lucky? And do you need to be lucky? Or does one lead to the other?
Do I need to be lucky to have serendipity?
Yeah.
I think they're independent. I don't think luck has anything to do with this, actually. When I first found that quote, fortune favors a prepared mind. I think of we're always preparing our minds. And with those three secrets, I think we're preparing our minds well. But I thought in that quote that actually it was chance favors a prepared mind. And I was corrected when I researched that it's fortune. And fortune is different than luck. Fortune is something I make. And, you know, we understand with the law of karma that, you know, every action I take will bring a return. And so I create a fortune by performing actions that are aligned with my highest and actions that bring benefit to others. So that creates a spiritual fortune for me. So my fortune might be connected to serendipity, that actions I have performed, each action that is bringing benefit to others naturally will bring. And so suddenly I've got six people telling me about this job that because people want to help me and they'll help me find jobs, say. Whereas if I haven't done that, I might find myself alone in the same job search. So I think fortune and serendipity are more connected. So in other words, I will be placed in a higher and higher vibrational field based on the fortune that I am creating through my actions. And I will therefore encounter higher value things that are of value to me as I progress. Whereas luck, I don't even know what luck really means anymore. Now that I understand karma, I'm not sure what luck is. So sorry, RT, I don't think I can answer that one.
You answered it with explanation, so that's beautiful. My next question to you is, how is serendipity, the question is, how does serendipity affect my creativity?
Well, we have a couple people here who paint very beautifully, and they're forever trying to get a little group of us to paint. So I surrendered to this a few weeks ago. And don't worry, we're going to start really easy. We're going to start with dots. You can't go wrong with dots. So paintbrush, paint, water, dots. We did tons of dots. And when it was done, her dots looked amazing. My dots looked really bad. And she kept saying to me, well, you have to trust the process. You have to flow with it. And I thought, there's just no flowing for me in this department. I'm creative in tons of ways, but not in that particular way. And I think it's because I freeze up. I already assume it's going to be ugly. And so I make it ugly somehow. And we had this with collaging. Another woman here loves to collage. And I just found it so stressful. I have to put all these pictures on this board. And hers always looks amazing. Mine always looks really bad. And I finally conquered it. I've done so many collages in the last 2 years. And now I like doing them. And now they flow. Therefore, my answer to that question is, I think with the creativity, trusting the signal. So I pick up a picture and I go, I like that one. I don't know why. I like that one. I don't know why. I have my little pile of pictures. I like them all. I have the board. Now, where are they going to go? Ooh, I don't like that one over there. Oh, I don't. You know, it's a process of recognizing what you like or what is pleasing to you. And you can't know that until you experiment. And creativity, in a way, is about experimenting. And so feeling free to experiment, I think, is a process of serendipity in our creativity. I think I don't think one without the other would work. I think creativity by definition would be a serendipitous journey to express beauty.
Hmm. So how do you enable flow?
As
versus freezing up.
Well, I'm sort of a back in the saddle kind of gal. So I try it again and I keep trying. And each time trying, so if it's something that's important to me and I want to flow with it and not freeze up, each time my focus would be less on the doing of the thing and more on the quality of my inner state of mind. Oh, I was more relaxed this time. Oh, I allowed myself just to put things down even though I didn't like them, you know, and then I rearrange them later, whatever, the collaging experience. But I think it's got to do with allowing yourself to unfreeze. And, you know, like when you take something out of the freezer, it takes a while to thaw. I think it's the same for the soul. If the soul is frozen in relation to anything, it takes a little time and patience and warmth, the warmth of love. And in my case, as a meditator, the warmth of God's love, the warmth of the sun on me sort of slowly melts me. And I feel like my heart has been melting over all these years as a meditator. And it's not as frozen, it's more thawed than it was before. I think it's about how you approach yourself when you are frozen in the face of something and you want to flow instead. You it's an oxymoron to force oneself to flow.
Okay. All right. What do you do if you're not sure of what you're looking for? So what can you do if you're not sure, not fully sure of what you're looking for?
You know, my work as a consultant, very often it is about just this. What am I looking for? Either a leader in the organization, what do they really want to have happen? Or individuals in a coaching context, you know, for next steps for them in anything, in professional life, in personal. So I think we have evidence. So I ask questions to help people discover what it is they really want, because I think we know what we want, but we don't know that we know it. So if we look for data in our life, we can see just by looking at the choices I did make, I can see each time what influenced my choice was this longing, this deeper desire. I can look at the moments when I've been happiest in my life, and I can see, oh yeah, these conditions together tend to be conditions that allow me to blossom like this flower on the screen and to flourish. So I think what we're really looking for ultimately is to be ourselves, to be fully, completely, freely, happily me. And we might say, I'm looking for peace or I'm looking for love, but ultimately we're really looking to return to ourselves, to be our best selves. And so I think our life is a series of clues, and it's just looking for those clues and understanding the signals. What message is that giving me about what I'm really looking for? And most of us listening here today are probably, if not young adults, adults. We've got good track record. We've got good data to look at if we look back at our lives. It's just a few questions help us get there. And then the questions in the present moment of, you know, what is my heart longing for? For me, the ego doesn't always allow me to answer that honestly. So many strategies as a facilitator in experiential education. This is why I love experiential education, because if you ask somebody, tell me how you will do this, or they'll give you either a rote answer or the answer they think they should give you. They'll give you an answer that essentially that they already have. And they already knew that. So there's no learning in that. Whereas through an experience, you'll discover something new. So for me, I'm always looking for questions and experiences that fly under the radar screen of ego, because ego is the one that freezes the soul. So if I can fly under that and ask a question that allows you to answer without the ego, allow, you know, kind of puts the ego on hold for a moment or anesthetizes it for a moment so that you can actually respond. So for instance, you know, the methods, many people do this. They do the other hand writing. For me, that would mean my left hand. And this one question, what is your heart longing for? And you're to answer that with the opposite hand writing, and you're to write for a good, I don't know, fill the page, there's some limit or something. But the point is, by not writing in the hand I feel total control of, I am suddenly vulnerable. And in that vulnerable moment, asking myself that question, I'm more likely to tap, you know, to touch the real me, the soul, and not the packaged or, you know, the canned answer that the intellect would offer, which would keep me stuck. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, there's methods to get at it. I guess I'm saying I've spent my life learning methods to do just that, to help somebody discover what they really want. But I think we can look at our lives and see what we really want, because we've got repeated themes, track record in our life.
Is there an art of putting together the right question? And if there is, how do we develop it?
Artie. Yes, it's an art. It's definitely an art. There's a lot of science in it, understanding what opens consciousness and what. So, I mean, you know this. I know you know this, but you can ask somebody a yes, no question. So, did you do this? And they'll go, no. Or did you do that? And yes or no. Or you could ask them, so what did you do? I mean, that's the science of arts, because of questions, because, you know, one narrows someone's consciousness to yes, no, and the other opens their consciousness to, oh, what did you discover? What did you experience from that that session this evening? So what is your takeaway from this evening's talk? You know, what aspect of this evening's talk is useful for you at this point? How, what from this talk would help you improve your relationship with serendipity? I don't know. Questions that allow the person to be interested in answering them. Most questions that people ask, they kind of already know the answer to. So it's not really very interesting for the person to answer. But a good question is one that you yourself don't know the answer to. As a facilitator, I never ask a question I know the answer to, because then why would I ask the question? It's condescending. It's patronizing. So for me, that's a good question. Yes, there is an art to asking questions. But there's a science too. And so you just get better at it.
Hmm. And the final question for you this evening, what was the first moment you can remember of experiencing serendipity in your life?
I can't remember much of the past. So first moment, I don't know if I can remember a first moment. I can remember some big moments for sure. And I can remember moments every day, like why I stayed here instead of doing something else, because then a call came in that was really important. You know, I can recognize serendipity every single day, 100 times a day, actually, in my life. But first, oh, I'm sorry, Artie. But I'll take the big one. You know, the big one was giving my credit card to my colleague to go to the Mexico retreat against all my attitudes, with all my attitudes, and going. It was a total serendipity And it wasn't a coincidence that I met somebody who was a BK student there and I'm now sitting here with you. That would be my biggest moment.
That's lovely. Thank you very, very much, Judy, for sharing with us this evening here in London and your afternoon there. Judy, many, many people are saying thank you very much for making the time to be with us this evening.